So we discussed the first eventuality of the deviated yogi in 6.41. 6.42 describes the second possibility. Athava yogina meva.
Athava yogina meva.
Kule bhavati dhimata.
Kule bhavati dhimata.
Etaddi durlabdaram.
Etaddi durlabdaram.
Loke janmaya didrusham.
Loke janmaya didrusham.
So athava means alternatively, otherwise. So that means Krishna is talking about two possible trajectories for the deviated yogi.
In the previous verse, he said that he goes to heaven and then he is born in the Shuchinam Shrimatamge. Otherwise, he says, Athava yoginameva kule bhavati dhimatam. He is born, he doesn't go to heaven at all. He is born directly into a family of dhimatam. Now, the word dhi means intelligence. So, tadhyaham. So, please give me intelligence. Prahlad Maharaj is praying in a famous verse in his 7.9 verse, prayers to Narasimhadev. So, dhi means intelligence. So, dhi matam, those who have dhi, those who are intelligent, they are very wise. So, he is born bhavati, he is born into, he appears into. And such a word is, etadhi durlabhataram. It is extremely rare. Loke janma yadidrusham. So, the word durlabha is not used very cheaply by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of using durlabhataram? You know this, there are superlatives, good, better and best. So, durlabha, durlabhatara and durlabhatam. So, durlabhatara, etaddi durlabhataram. So, it is extremely rare, Krishna is saying. Where else does the word durlabha come in the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah? Yes, sudurlabha. There also is sudurlabha for that a person who surrenders to me after becoming Jnanman is very rare. So 7.19 talks about that. So it's not a word that comes very frequently. So here, Krishna says this word is very rare. Loke janma yadidrusham. Now what is the rarity of this word? So etaddi durlabhataram. So actually speaking, the number of devotees in this world are very few as compared to the large number of people in the world, and especially if there are dedicated devotee couples and if a child is born in their family, then the child gets a lot of positive spiritual impressions right from the childhood. In fact, not just right from the childhood, if the parents are dedicated devotees, then it is even before birth, from preconception itself. So Srila Prabhupada contrasts in a lecture, he says, the Vedic culture means that we do good to the child even before he is born. Whereas the modern culture means that people kill the child even before he is born. That's abortion. It's a tragic contrast. And of course, after he is born also, there is Atma, his soul-killing civilization, which kills his spiritual propensities. So in such a civilization, you know, when Srila Prabhupada went to America, he saw that this child of Gopal and Sally Agarwal, he was having children, you know, they drink milk with a bottle. Like they first take from the mother, and the same way they are not yet learned to chew, they don't have teeth, so they suck. So they suck from a bottle. So he saw, Prabhupada saw that there was some yellow liquid over there. So it didn't look like milk. Prabhupada asked the Sally Agarwal, what is this that your child is taking? A small baby who doesn't have teeth. So he said, actually become a little embarrassed. He said, what is the matter? What is it? He said, actually it is liquefied beef. It's liquefied beef. So he said that we don't want our child to have protein deficiency. So we are giving him, so the child doesn't have the capacity to chew, but he is being fed beef at that time. So this is the misfortune of the civilization. You know, actually, even if proteins are needed, proteins are available in a much more natural way through milk. Why does it need liquefied beef for that? But actually, these are kind of samskaras that often come to people when they are born in a materialistic society. So where the parents are miseducated, and because of that, they bring up the child in a very very unfortunately misled way. The parents are very rarely desiring harm for their children. Parents are always the well-wishers of the children. But just being a well-wisher is not enough. One has to know how to be a well-wisher. So, even for brahmacharis, their parents are their well-wishers. But they don't understand what is actually good. And because of that, often they oppose the son becoming brahmachari quite fiercely. So here, your child is born in a devotional family, then right from the childhood, the soul gets a spiritual culture, spiritual training, and then the spiritual life can move forward very smoothly. It is, so it's very rare. Etaddi durlabhataram. Extremely rare. Loke janmayadidrusham. Actually speaking, at this janma is extremely rare. Now interestingly, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada places himself in this category. Isn't it? So Prabhupada says, both our spiritual master and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families. So, interestingly, now we know that both Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur were eternal associates of the Lord. And they could have been born anywhere. So Prabhupada's glory is not just because he was born in a devotional family. And we understand that Prabhupada came from the spiritual world. So there are many people who try to trace back Prabhupada. What is Prabhupada's Swarupa in the spiritual world? Now Prabhupada strongly discouraged such speculation. You know, one time one devotee asked the Prabhupada, when we have this Mangalarti, Nikunja Yuno Ratikeli Siddhe, Yaya Libir Yukti Rapeshi, Ratrati Dakshalati Vallabhasi. The spiritual master is very expert in assisting the Sakhis in their intimate service to Radha Krishna. What does this mean? Prabhupada replied, none of your business. Prabhupada was very blunt about it. Prabhupada said, this is not for you to speculate. So, whenever Srila Prabhupada was asked anything about his Swarupa, he didn't speak anything about it. Now, some people, they try to claim that there's one song of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada wrote two songs when he went abroad. So, one song is the Markinya Bhagavata Dharma, and the other is, one is Bodhakrupa Koyali Krishna, and the other is Radharani Jabe Krupahabe. Same one it is. Basically, two songs over there. So, in one of the songs, he says, When will I go and see what is there in the tiffin of Krishna? I'll play with Krishna in the forest and I will see what is in the tiffin of Krishna. Something like that. So, some people try to extrapolate and say that Prabhupada is Sakyavas and not Madhuravas. And especially some devotees from Gaudiya Mutt say that if you want Madhuri Ras, Prabhupada can't take you there. You have to come to us. So it's so stupid. You know, we are having Indriyatukti Ras right now. And that is what we have to become free from. So, ultimately speaking, it is not this sort of sentimental speculation that is going to help us to make spiritual advancement. It is dedication. It is commitment to the service of Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada discouraged speculation about his Swarupa. Now, Srila Prabhupada answered the question about who he was various in different times, differently. So, here, in print is saying that I was also born in a devotee family. Now, this does not mean that Prabhupada is saying that he is also advanced but deviant to you. That's not what, that's if you read Prabhupada's wording, they are very careful. Prabhupada says, we had the opportunity to take birth in such families. So, Prabhupada is, what he is saying is, Prabhupada is talking about how this is Durlabha and I had that fortune. Prabhupada is not saying that I am a devoted yogi and I was born like this. So, Krishna can arrange for his devotees to be born in devotionally minded families so that the potency of devotional samskara is illustrated for the world. And Krishna can get his devotees to be born in non-devotional families, yet his devotees means intimate devotees, partial, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was born in the Shakta family. So that actually can evolve how a person can, by thinking, by his independent thoughtfulness, come to the conclusion that Gaudiya Vaishnava is the highest power. So Krishna can do either way. So we understand that Krishna's acting in the world, directly or through his devotees, is not stereotyped. So Krishna can act in various ways. So, as per Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was asked by Tamal Krishna Maharaj at one time, But what happened first time when the devotees came to India, at that time, Prabhupada in good faith introduced his disciples to his god brothers, and then he told them that you can keep him in the. They did not have any center in India at that time. So you can stay in their Gaudiya Mart. But then, what happened was, some of his god brothers, they might have been well intentioned, but they felt that Prabhupada was not properly representing Bhaktivedanta Thakur teachings. And they started telling certain things which were different from what Prabhupada was telling. And one of the devotees got very disturbed and he almost left Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada told him, he told them, don't stay there. And there are several letters of Prabhupada where he said, don't associate with Gaudiya Mart devotees. He says, we respect them from distance, but don't associate with them. Now, of course, this is not like an eternal command that if somebody is going to associate with them, then another person is going to follow. But the point is, one has to follow one's spiritual master properly so that one can make spiritual advancement. So Prabhupada said that, that the Mukund Maharaj innocently asked Prabhupada that question. When Prabhupada was very sick in 1968, roughly, and then he was going to India to take treatment. So then Mukund Maharaj just asked him, Mukund Prabhupada, then, Prabhupada, you know, if you are not able to come back, can you please send one of your god brothers? And Prabhupada's word is, Prabhupada became very grave. And Mukund Maharaj said, I felt very impressed, as if I had committed a great offense. And then, tears came from Prabhupada's eyes. And Prabhupada said, my spiritual master was special. He was a Vaikuntha man. He saved me. So, all the other devotees discuss afterwards, and then they understood that actually the spiritual master is not a replaceable commodity like that. That is, okay, if you can't come back, send your god brother. So, then later on, actually, then the devotees came to India. They said that India has so many sadhus, but still we didn't find anyone like Srila Prabhupada. That you are somebody who was so deeply rooted in the spiritual culture, at the same time so profoundly compassionate to reach out to everyone and bring them towards Krishna. So when we are glorifying Srila Prabhupada, that doesn't mean we are minimizing his god brothers. We just understand the principle that we have to commit ourselves to Srila Prabhupada, and our connection with Gaudiya Sampradaya is through Srila Prabhupada. So now, who was Srila Prabhupada? There are different. Srila Prabhupada, Tamalakrishna Maharaj also, in a letter, he had come to India and he probably heard something like this from different Gaudiya Mart devotees. So he wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying, Prabhupada, does the spiritual master know about his previous lives? So now, for them, all of them, the spiritual master is Srila Prabhupada. That is indirectly what he is asking, do you know about your previous lives? So Prabhupada writes back, and servant of servant it is given. He says, I don't know why you ask such a question. And I think I mentioned this in Aishwabhishat course also. Prabhupada said that, you know, it doesn't matter whether the spiritual master is a Nitya Siddha or a Sadhana Siddha. If he is Siddha, he can make you Siddha. A person is a millionaire, it doesn't matter whether he is born millionaire or whether he became a millionaire. He can give you charity and he can help you to become Siddhi. And Prabhupada said, one astrologer said that I was a very, very successful businessman or king in my previous life. But Prabhupada was very non-committal about astrology. One astrologer said like that. So Prabhupada did not give too much credence to it, but at the same time, Prabhupada did not deny it. They just quoted it. Prabhupada would quote sometime that, one astrologer has said that the former Prime Minister of India has become one of the two dogs owned by a dog owner in Switzerland. So, Prabhupada quoted that. So, one astrologer has said, prominent astrologer. So, Prabhupada would quote that, but he would not insist on that. So, basically, now it could have been possible that Prabhupada is taking many births. Krishna sent him to this world, but it is not only one. Prabhupada could have come for many a time. So we don't know. We don't have to speculate. So the point here is that Prabhupada's placing himself in this purport simply indicates the power of the devotional samskaras. That's all. It doesn't indicate that Prabhupada belongs to this category. No, Prabhupada, on a few occasions, to his intimate disciples, did say that I was in the spiritual world and Krishna sent me. So Prabhupada did not insist on that as his qualification for preaching the word. He said, it is the instruction of my spiritual master, it is my surrender to the instruction of the spiritual master, that is my qualification. So in general, Srila Prabhupada recognized the supernatural aspects, but he did not emphasize them. And that's why there is no need to go into speculating about what is the swarupa of the spiritual master, this whole zone is very, very speculative and very offensive. It can become very offensive also. We start judging. Now somebody says, should the spiritual master be a pure devotee? Well, fine. He should be a pure devotee, you can say, but how do you know he's a pure devotee? All that we can see is whether the spiritual master is committed to following the process given by Srila Prabhupada, by the acharyas, and he's inspiring others to follow the process, and either he's inspiring me to follow the process. If he is, then I'll be spiritual advancement. So, now interestingly, when we look at this verse, what does it indicate? It says that somebody, so what are the two alternatives? First alternative is that somebody has practiced spiritual life a little bit. And he's got some taste, but he's got some material desires also. Then to exhaust those material desires, the person is allowed the facility to enjoy heavens. So the first possibility, that means talking about 41, is for those who have material desires still remaining. 42 is for those who don't have so much material desires remaining, but who have still not yet developed sufficient attraction to Krishna. There are two aspects in spiritual advancement. One is detachment from matter, the second is attachment to Krishna. So, these two trajectories are for different categories of people. One is attached to material enjoyment, other is not sufficiently attached to Krishna. So the second person, athava yoginam eva, he is not attached to material enjoyment. He is given up the desire for material enjoyment, but still there is anartha nivritti and there is artha pravritti. So if the artha pravritti has not happened sufficiently, then the person has to take birth again in a devotee family and then get the artha pravritti by the devotional practices in that life. Sometimes you may see some devotees, devotee couples, children, sometimes they pass away early in their childhood. So that is because those children could have been great devotees and then they have just a little bit karma remaining to complete, a little bit more attraction to develop, and they complete that and they go back to God. So, did I tell in the Ishwarupnit course the story of Vishwarupa Prabhu and his daughter? No? Okay, so, Radhanma has written this new book called, tentatively called as the Yoga of Love. So, the first book is his searching for the path of bhakti. The second book is his experiences while practicing and sharing bhakti. So, he talks a lot about the Radha Gopinath community and he talks about how different devotees have, he talks about Krishna Chandra Prabhu in the book, he talks about various devotees. So, he talks about Vishwarupa Prabhu over there and he says how bhakti can help a person to transcend the inevitable miseries of material existence. So, now Vishwarupa Prabhu has two daughters. So, the younger daughter, her name is Varsha. So, when she was born, there was some lot of complications during the birth, during the pregnancy and prenatal and postnatal. Both there were complications and because of that, she was physically damaged, also behaviorally a little bit hampered. And the doctors told that she will not be able to live for long and she will have a lot of diseases and a lot of pain. So, and generally speaking, if such a child is born, many doctors recommend that you abort the child because there's not much hope for the child to grow. But of course, many of the complications for her happened. There were some complications pre-birth and a lot of complications happened after birth. So, at this time now, Vishwarupa Prabhu's wife, she herself earlier had cancer and she had treatment and she recovered from the cancer. But she is weak because of that. So, both of them were very distressed when they got this news. This child is so much traumatized and in one sense, it's a great burden for the parents. And Vishwa Prabhu himself was a doctor. He said that, I have seen when this our child is born, the whole family goes into agony that he is caring for his child. And then they came to Rahat Mahari and they said that they were asking for some guidance. So Maharaj writes that I prayed to Krishna and then I told them that, you have two options. He said, one option is that you think that this world, everything happens by chance and you are just the unlucky people within the lottery that is life. The other is that everything happens by Krishna's plan and there is some special plan of Krishna over it. So Vishwaprabhu said, Maharaj, we have faith that everything is happening by Krishna's plan. But they're just not able to see what could be Krishna's plan over it. Because they were counselors, they are preachers, and because of this child being born this way, and all their other services getting disrupted, they are not able to practice bhakti properly. So, to some extent, not practice bhakti means do their various services in a proper way. So then, at that time, Maharaj told them that actually, what is essentially bhakti? Bhakti is selfless love and service. We selflessly love and serve Krishna. So normally in this world, when we are rendering service, even to Krishna, that is tangible selfishness. If we are preaching, then we also get credit and glorification. If we are counseling, we also get credit. Whatever we do, even if we intend to do it purely, still, inevitably our service is tangible selfishness. We also get something for our own pleasure while rendering service for Krishna's pleasure. He said, but all as sincere devotees, we all want to become pure and selfless in our service attitude. But it's difficult because of our past condition. So he says, Krishna has sent this child in your life to teach you the value of selfless service. When parents take care of their child, they all expect, oh, my child will become beautiful and wealthy and famous and he will bring glory to me. So the service that you are offering to this child, that this child will never reciprocate it. She will never reciprocate, never be able to reciprocate at a practical level. So you should see that every single thing that you are doing for her, actually is Krishna who is personally accepting your service through her. So Vishwaprabhu said that I talked with him after this incident also. So I got the book, I read the book, I was so moved by the whole story. And I talked with Vishwaprabhu afterwards. So he said that particular perspective, when Maharaj said that, it completely changed our perspective. Rather than seeing her as her coming in our life as a tragedy, we started seeing it as an opportunity for developing pure and selfless service attitude. And then, slowly we also started seeing that there's something so special about the child, because ever since the child was born, everybody, all the devotees in the community, they would come and pray for her, chant for her, and she was always constantly surrounded by spiritual vibrations. And because of her, what happened was that we also focused more on Krishna and service to Krishna and offering Krishna to her in whatever way we can. So Maharaj writes that Vishwaprabhu is not against science, he is himself a doctor, but this child was such a condition that science could not reach anything. Could not do anything tangible for the child. But where science could not go, bhakti could go beyond the body and touch the soul of the child. And they started saying that this child, we have an opportunity, whatever karma this person, the soul has, and the soul cannot do any further karma because the body is so limited in allowing anything. So whatever past karma is there is getting exhausted, and if we give devotional samskaras to the child, we can help that soul to go back to Krishna there. So it's such a special opportunity. And she had an older sister, and then the older sister, normally she was thinking, I'll have a younger sister and I'll play with her. But then she said, when I heard from Radhanath Maharaj and other senior Vaishnavas, our family members are there not for our enjoyment, but for serving them. So the sister is there in my life, not for my play, but for my service. So she started observing that this little girl, she would constantly be crying in pain. and her mother would have to constantly fondle her, and sometimes the mother would not be able to sleep for nights and nights together, because as soon as she put the child off her lap, she would start crying. So then her sister found that when she would hear the chirping of birds, at that time, this child would become a little peaceful. So then she decided, how can I serve this child? She said, there's a park behind our home. So I would go there every day and I would hear the singing of the birds. And I would start repeating that, trying to repeat that. And then I would come and repeat that singing of the birds to my sister. And she would become peaceful. And then Maharaj writes that, you know, just because she not only, because she had that attitude to serve her sister in this way, not only was she able to sing and pacify her sister, but she developed a very sweet musical voice. And she is one of the best singers, Mataji singers in her congregation. You know, we have this, what is the musical group called by devoted children?
Enchanted.
So she is one of the lead singers in that. So Maharaj writes in that book that the art of living is to achieve a balance between the awkwardness of our body and the elegance of our soul. It's a sutra.
What is the art of living?
It is to achieve a balance between the awkwardness of our body and the elegance of our souls. So from the bodily point of view, this is a very awkward situation. So it's not at all easy to face such situations. Is to achieve a balance between the awkwardness of our body and the elegance of our soul. So actually speaking, it is not at all easy to deal with such situations in life. But when we have a spiritual perspective, when we know that beyond the body there is a soul, and the soul is unaffected by all bodies ups and downs, then one can tolerate and transcend such situations. So even if a devotee faces difficulties in his or her life, actually the devotee's perspective is different. And because the perspective is different, so that perspective actually takes off a lot of agony. It's a devotee's perspective. One can see the opportunity to grow. But other people also say that problems are opportunities to grow. But if problems are such that they wipe out the material life itself, somebody may say, I'll think positive. But if I think I am the body and I get a terminal disease, how much positive thing can I do actually? Isn't it? Because I am going to end. I can say, oh, I will live happily till I end. But then the pain is there, I can't live happily. What can I actually do? But when we understand that there is a long-term perspective to life, there is, I am not, my life doesn't begin or end with the body. It exists beyond the body. Then the body are the ups and downs, and the ups and downs in the environment connected with the body don't affect us so much. So what happens is that such a birth is very fortunate. So although from the material point of view, sometimes it may seem unfortunate, but that is only external appearance. The internal substance is that it is a very fortunate birth. And person can make immense spiritual advancement by being born in a devotional family. And the parents, by serving their children and making devotees, can also make spiritual advancement. So let's move forward. So in general, if devotees get married, some devotees feel that I'll get married and will not have any children. But that is not recommended in Grihastha Ashram. Because when the children are born, the children force the parents to become responsible and selfless. So that also is a process of maturation that happens. And if somebody doesn't want to have children, then actually the natural process of Grihastha Ashram and the purification that happens thereby, that often gets checked. So in some exceptional situations, when there are some biological limitations, then the devotee may not go out of the way to have children. That is fine. But
In general, it is recommended that one does ashram and have children and help the children to become devotees. And through that, actually one makes spiritual advancement by trying to raise the children up to become devotees. Now sometimes, especially in our movement, the children of devotees, it may seem that they don't become devotees. But often that happened in the first generation of ISKCON, because it was a big cultural turmoil, in the sense that the parents were non-devotees, they became devotees, and they adopted a very, very, what shall we say, rigid devotional culture. And then they tried to grow up the children also in similar culture. And then the children got exposed to the outside world, and suddenly they felt, oh, this is what we want to enjoy. So many times the children may go out temporarily to the material life also. But deep within, that attraction to Krishna will be there. And gradually they will come back. And especially second generation, gradually it is happening that more and more devotee parents and children are also becoming devotees. So they have the devotional inclination and they may want to explore material life a little bit. But after exploring material life, they will come back, because they will see there is not much over there. But if they are opposed, don't go over there, and they are curtailed and they are restricted very strongly, then they go into material life not because material life is pleasurable, but because they are driven by the rebellious tendency. See, all of us have a rebellious tendency within us. So when we become brahmacharis, we use our rebellious tendency to come to Krishna. But when there are devotee children, they use their rebellious tendency to go away from Krishna. So actually speaking, the rebellious tendency has to be very carefully channelized. So sometimes it may appear, so if there is too much restriction, you know, whenever there is any authority, there are three kinds of authorities. It's a whole different subject, but there's authoritarian, permissive, and authoritative. Three different kinds of authorities. So what is the difference between these three? So authoritarian means this is what you have to do. Then authoritarian is one extreme. Then permissive is the other extreme. And the third is authoritative. Authoritarian. Now what is the difference between these three? I'll just explain this. Authoritative. Now it is here. Okay. Yeah. So see, you know, in guidance there are two things. There is education and there is restriction. So restriction means don't do this. In education, why you shouldn't do this? Why you should do this? So, the authoritarian parents, what authoritarian guides, what they do is, there is only restriction, but no education. Authoritarian, there is no education, there is only restriction. Permissive, there is no restriction, no education. Authoritative means there is education and then there is restriction. Permissive, there might be education also over here. There might be. It depends on how permissive. If there is no education, no restriction, that is not even permissive. That is just irresponsible. And it's doing nothing for the parent. So in general,
whenever we are guiding anyone, there is no education, there is no restriction, then that is completely irresponsible. Then such a person is actually not a proper parent at all. So when there are both, there is education, okay, this is why we should do this, this is how we should do this. There is inspiration, then education, that there is facility to practice, and then there is also some restriction. So when only one of them is there, then it is unbalanced. So gradually devotees are also learning how to be responsible parents, responsible authorities, and it's an evolutionary process that is happening. So the second generation, more and more devotee children are actually becoming devotees. So now the aspiring transcendentalists, now when Krishna is talking tatratam, he is talking about both possibilities. And both alternatives, 41 and 42, he will describe from now onwards. So the branching was like this for these two, but afterwards, from 43 onwards, is the common trajectory for both, 43 to 45. Tatratam buddhi samyogam,
tatratam buddhi samyogam,
labhate paurvadehikam,
labhate paurvadehikam,
yatate chatato bhuyaha,
yatate chatato bhuyaha,
samsiddhau guru nandana,
samsiddhau guru nandana.
So tatratam, tatratam means from that buddhi samyogam, one gets buddhi from the previous practice. Labhate paurvadehikam, from the previous practice, which one done in the previous body, one gets buddhi. Because the buddhi is common. The mana buddhi hankar is common. And the attraction to Krishna that is cultivated, that is deep within the soul, that is there. Yatate yatato bhuya. So, one starts endeavoring once again. Samsiddhau guru nandana. So, Krishna, Arjuna had used the word samsiddhi. What is the siddhi that he gets? Does he get any perfection? So, he will endeavor again for perfection. So now, someone may guess, how will he come to know about it? Say, I am born here. Suppose in my next life, I am born in Africa or somewhere, there are no devotees. Of course, now devotees are everywhere by Krishna's mercy. But still, there are so many people who never come in contact with devotees. So how will the person get that buddhism yoga? How will he get that? It's quite realistic possibility that he may not get that from the material logistics point of view. But Krishna said that something beyond much material logistics of operating over here. What is that? Purvabhyasena tenaiva,
purvabhyasena tenaiva,
kriyate yavashopi saha,
kriyate yavashopi saha,
jikyasurapi yogasya,
jikyasurapi yogasya,
shabda brahmati vartate,
shabda brahmati vartate.
So purva abhyas, by the past practice, riyate means attracted, pulled. So avashopisah, one is helplessly attracted towards Krishna. Riyate yavashopisah, one is helplessly attracted to Krishna. And jigyasur api yogasya, such a person, because of their past attraction, one will become a jigyasu. Oh, come. What is causing the attraction? Radha Madhava also writes in his book Journey Home that when he decided to do that fast for 1 month, taking only water and a little carrot, and then he throws away his harmonica. So at that time, he's asked, why was I being so fierce with myself? He said, at that time I felt that these were not my decisions. It was as if some force was directing me onwards, and I was simply acting upon that force. At one level we can say it is humility. He has so much determination to do these things. But in such cases it's also true that when some way that spiritual attraction takes charge of a person, then actually the person doesn't care for anything. Riyateya vishopisa. And is almost helplessly attracted. And jigyasu api yogasya. So jigyasu for what? Yoga. For perfection. For connection with God. Connection with spiritual reality. And Shabda Brahma Ativartate. Ativartate means to go beyond. This is an interesting phrase over here. Shabda Brahma Ativartate here means that he will go beyond the Vedic rituals. See, what was Arjuna's question? That somebody is practicing Karma Kanda. So somebody is practicing Karma, and this is what I talked about yesterday. By the path of Karma, somebody will go to Swarga. by the path of transcendence, by the path of bhakti, one will go to moksha, to spiritual world. But now, what if somebody is not able to complete, and he is not going to get swarga, he is not going to get moksha? So Krishna is telling that, okay, will he again fall back to this path and get trapped in this path? So again, that means, okay, he doesn't complete spiritual success, but what is the guarantee that he, if he goes to swarga and comes back over here and he's enjoying material life, he sacrificed material life, but he again came back to the same material life. So what is the guarantee that it won't happen again? He says, no, that purva abhya, that past attraction will force him towards Krishna. It will pull him towards Krishna. And he will go, shabda brahmati vartate, he will go beyond shabda brahma. Radhishyam was telling us when he decided to become brahmachari, his sister told him, see, you are such a diligent devotee. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that actually spiritual life never goes in. So you practice spiritual life now, in your next life you become a brahmachari. So Radhishyam said, in my past life I must have had a sister who told me the same thing. But that's why I took birth again and I was born here. So shabda brahmati vartate, one goes beyond Vedic rituals. So one wants something higher. That one is practicing ritualistic religious life, but one feels, no, I want to go beyond that. That's how it happens, that one is taken higher up. So now, after describing this, Krishna will give a conclusion to this.
Prayatnadyatamanastu
Yogi Samshuddha Kilvishaha
Yogi Samshuddha Kilvishaha
Aneka Janma Samsiddhas
Aneka Janma Samsiddhas
Tato Yati Paramgatim
Tato Yati Paramgatim
Prayatnadyatamanastu Prayatnadyatamanastu. One makes prayatna, endeavor, yatamanastu. Seriously endeavor, yogi Samshuddha Kilvishaha. He becomes purified of all the contaminants. Aneka Janma Samsiddhas. That it may take many lifetimes, but he will attain Samsiddhi. Tad Ito Yati Paramgatim. It may take many lives, but he will surely attain the ultimate destination. So, this is how Krishna will describe that. Yes, he will not get lost. He will attain the supreme destination. So, actually speaking, this Aneka Janma Samsiddhas indicates that the yogi should be ready to practice spiritual life for more than one life also. It's interesting that Hiranyakashipu was ready to practice material life for more than one life. You know, how is that? You know, when Hiranyakashipu comes to know that Hiranyaksha has been killed by Vishnu, he becomes very angry and he says, I'll do tapasya. And by doing tapasya, I will one day get so much power that I will kill Vishnu. And he said that. So, his Brahmaji has done tapasya for 10,000 years. For what? Thousands of years, according to, there are different calculations according to different levels. For thousands of years, he did tapasya. So, I said, I'll do tapasya like that, I'll become the next Brahma. So, then Chakravarti Pada's commentary is saying that, that how can the other, he's telling Rakshasa, I'm going to do tapasya, and then I will come back and I will destroy this Vishnu, who has become partial like a child and has gone against us. Then the other Rakshasa ask him, hey, Brahma lived for so long, you are not going to live for that long. How can you do that much tapasya? So he says, no problem. He says, soul is eternal. And even if I ever do tapasya, I die, in my next life I will born, I will again do tapasya. And I will continue to do tapasya for as many lifetimes as is required, till I become as powerful as Brahma. And then when I become the supreme person in the universe, then I will find Vishnu and I will kill him. So, it's a perverse determination. So, actually, facts are important. Philosophical facts are also important. But more important than philosophical facts is the purpose. I may know that I am eternal, but what am I doing with the knowledge that I am eternal? So, ultimately, spiritual life is not about knowledge. Spiritual life is about purpose. Spiritual life is not about gaining new knowledge. It is about changing our purposes. You know, the modern version of this Hiranyakashipu is the jihadis who become suicide bombers and they are ready to kill others and they are ready to kill themselves
And they're thinking, yes, in the next life I will get, I will go to Jannat and I will enjoy with 73 virgin angels for the rest of eternity. That is their idea. Of course, that is not in the Quran. But that is the interpretation of the Quran that gullible young people born in poor families are fed with. But the mentality is the same. They may be having religious pretensions. They may be having quoting scripture. But the essence of spirituality is not just knowledge. It is purpose. What is our intention? So we become spiritual not just by gaining some new knowledge, but by changing our purpose. Changing our purpose from selfish to selfless. So if that doesn't happen, then there's not much use to just acquiring some spiritual information. So if a demoniac person like Hiranyakashipu is ready to persevere in spiritual practices for so many lives, so why should a devotee not be ready? Of course, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, it is quite possible that we can complete everything in one life itself. But we don't make demands like that from Krishna. And we are ready to practice for whatever is required, whatever time is required. And we will go back to God immediately after that. You know, one time Srila Prabhupada was asked that. Srila Prabhupada, of course, gave a different answer, different. Prabhupada said one time, I don't even want to go back to God. He said, I want to come back again and again and smash all these people who claim to be God. Keep smashing all of them. So, Prabhupada had that mood also different. The important point is here. If we are determined to serve Krishna, then it is almost as if we are in the spiritual world. Even if we are in the material world, it doesn't matter. Now, interestingly, in the previous purport, Prabhupada talks about these people. Aho bata shupachyoto karina. See, Srila Prabhupada does not transcendentalize everything in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, he also describes things from the non-transcendental perspective also. What does it mean? Like I said, about himself, he says, I was born in a devotee family. So like that, Prabhupada gave the example of Haridas Thakur over here. And he used the example of these people who are born in low families, in dog eaters' families, but they're chanting the holy names. So, I discussed this in my Ishopanishad course, so I'll mention this very briefly over here because it's relevant. That this verse from Devahuti is saying that how wonderful it is that those who are born in dog eaters' families are chanting the holy names. So, this indicates that they must have practiced everything else earlier. They must have been brahmachari, they must have gone to holy places, they must have bathed in the sacred places, sacred rivers, everything they have done already. That's how they are able to chant their holy names. But if the question comes up with them, they have done all that, then why should they be born in dog eaters' families? Isn't it? So that is because of the third possibility. See, what was Arjuna's question? You remember this? How many of you remember I discussed this in Ishopanishad? Okay, most of you remember, so I won't go into too much detail. So the first, Arjuna is asked about this possibility. Somebody gives up karma to practice a karma, but he can't do a karma completely, he can't do karma also properly. Then what will happen? But Krishna, there's another possibility, somebody gives up karma to do a karma. But then after that somebody falls back to vikarma. That means, say somebody leaves his parents to become a brahmachari. And it's after becoming a brahmachari, somebody elopes away with a girl. And then not practicing spiritual life also. And just living material life, and living material life, somebody is just doing sinful activities, all sorts of, breaking all principles. Then such a person has not actually come back to karma. Has gone down to vikarma. What will happen to such a person? At a spiritual level, the attraction to Krishna will remain. But at a material level, if somebody has done some wrong things, the reactions may come. And those reactions may lead to a birth in a low family. But the attraction to Krishna will remain. And the attraction to Krishna will ensure the person keeps practicing spiritual life. So now, from the absolute point of view, we know that Haridas Thakur is not this kind of person who was a transcendentalist who deviated and actually fell back to sin through life, and that's why he wanted low family. Actually, he's Brahmaji himself, who to demonstrate the universality of bhakti was arranged to be born in a low family. But we can understand the principles of bhakti in different ways. So when we transcendentalize everything, then we can't learn much lessons from it. So that's why the acharyas, whenever there are any pastimes or any things from the scriptures, they may give us multi-level interpretations to illustrate different principles. So here Srila Prabhupada giving the example that even somebody is born in low family, at that time also, it doesn't have to necessarily mean that he's unqualified. Might be qualified, but someone got deviated. One time some devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, actually all of you are the, these are all the devotees. All of you are the eternal sources of Lord Chaitanya. You're just shocked, you know, we used to take drugs, we used to use the eternal source of Lord Chaitanya. How is that possible? then the devotees went and asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada mentioned this once in a talk. Devotees went, Prabhupada, are all of us ISKCON devotees, eternal associates of Lord Chaitanya? Prabhupada said, yes. And Prabhupada paused. Everyone is. Everyone is an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya, isn't it? Ultimately, Mamai Vamsho Jeevan, okay, Jeevan, who does another? So everybody is Vamsho of Krishna. So you know, any fact, if it makes us proud, then that is unfavorable for bhakti. So we don't have to go into that sort of zone, that this person is special and that person is not special. Everybody is, if they're practicing spiritual life, they're special. So now, Krishna will give the conclusion of this. Tapasvibhyodhiko yogi Jnanibhyopi matodhikaha Karmabhyaschadhiko yogi Tasmad yogi bhavarjuna So tapasvibhyo adhiko yogi. Tapasvibhyo adhiko, that greater than the Pasvi is the yogi, greater than the Jnani is the yogi, greater than the Karmi is the yogi, therefore become a yogi. So, now till now, Krishna has not talked about a path called tapasya. And there is no tapasya yoga as such. But if somebody thinks that, okay, I'll just go into austerities, austerities have to have a purpose. In Narada Pancharatra, there is a famous words, Aradhito yadi hari tapasatatakim, Naradhito yadi hari tapasatatakim. If one is doing worship of Aradhana, then what is the need for tapasya? And if one is not doing worship of Krishna or Hari, then what is the use of tapasya? All your tapasya is fruitless if one is not doing, not coming to devotion. So, if somebody is doing tapasya, so Krishna has talked about two paths till now, karma and jnana. And Krishna had told Arjuna that karma is preferable to jnana. But then he is saying, actually, ultimately, if you practice yoga, so, which yoga is he talking about is not specifically stated over here. Now, if we look at the Vedic literature, yoga, the path of Ashtanga Yoga does not have a monopoly on the word yoga. Yoga does not automatically or necessarily have to be Ashtanga. Krishna is non-committal over here. Arjuna, become a yogi. Become a yogi. That means, become somebody who connects with the Absolute Truth. Become somebody who aims for ultimate freedom from all misery. The yogi is one who, Krishna defined yoga in this chapter as what? Tam vidya dukkha sanyogam vyogam yoga samgitam. That is yoga that which frees a person from misery. So Krishna is telling actually one who is on the transcendental path connecting with the Absolute Truth, who is the best? He is the best. And what is the perfection of that yoga? If somebody has a little ambiguity, what does this yogi actually refer to? Who is supposed to be? What is the yogi supposed to do? So Krishna says, become a yogi, but what kind of yogi? He will describe in the next verse. Yogi nama pi sarvesham.
Yogi nama pi sarvesham.
Madgate nantaratmana.
Madgate nantaratmana.
Shraddhavan bhajate yoma.
Shraddhavan bhajate yoma.
Same yukta tamo mataha.
Same yukta tamo mataha.
So yogi nama, among all yogi sarvesham, all kinds of yogi. Madgate nantaratmana, one who is madgate, within his thinking of me, within his heart, shraddhavan bhajate yoma, he worships with shraddha. So it's interesting, we would think of shraddha as a preliminary qualification of the path of bhakti, adau shraddha. But Krishna is talking about shraddha for a transcendental, shraddhavan bhajate yoma. So what is the shraddha referring to? Actually, Krishna will use this word shraddha again in 12.2. In 12.1, Arjuna asks Krishna, who is better? Is an impersonalist better or a personalist better? And then Krishna says, one who worships, my personal form is better. And again, he uses the word shraddha. utilitarianism towards Krishna. Yes, he's a meditational tool and ultimately will go beyond that. But no, one has faith in Krishna's personality. That the word Shraddhavan indicates that Krishna is not a meditational tool to be transcended. Krishna is the meditation, the goal of, ultimate goal of meditation to be achieved. And it's very significant that the same word will come twice in the Gita. So, let's now Srila Prabhupada in the purport will also describe elaborately about the yoga ladder. I'll go into the yoga ladder at a later stage. But this is a very, very significant word, Shraddhavan. And it comes at very critical phases in the Bhagavata. 6.47 it comes, 12.2 it comes. When it is coming here, it's not referring to preliminary Shraddha. Preliminary means? Yeah, but faith in the personality of Krishna. Transcendence. Krishna's personality is not material. So, this Shraddha is actually like Nishtha. When you run the Granatha Yukti, then one comes to Nishtha. So it's very significant that it is coming at a very advanced stage of bhakti. It is not coming in the initial stages. So advanced state in the transcendence of the personality of Krishna. Krishna's personality is not material. Krishna is not meditational tool to be transcended. And there are people who call themselves as transtheists. Now transtheists, we go beyond theism. We go beyond theism to merging in God. That is not the idea. Krishna is not a meditational tool to be transcended. Is the ultimate reality within transcendence. The Bhagavatam repeatedly uses the word Paratparaha for describing Krishna. Why Paratparaha? Para is Brahman. But Paratparaha is transcendental to Brahman. He is the ultimate absolute truth. In the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, the word will be used Param Brahma. With Brahma, it is Param Brahma. So now, what is the speciality of bhakti because of which the culmination, the highest growth of the path of yoga is said to be one of the things of Krishna? So, why is bhakti yoga the most complete yoga? Because it includes all the essential limbs of all other yogas. So, in karma yoga there is action, in jnana yoga there is knowledge, in dhyana yoga there is meditation. Bhakti yoga includes all these three. There is action because we are doing practical service to Krishna. There is knowledge because we cultivate philosophical knowledge about the glories of Krishna and how this world is also an energy of Krishna meant to be used for his service. And we also try to remember Krishna constantly. So in this way, the path of bhakti includes the essence of all other paths. So it's not just self-congratulatory idea that we are bhaktas, so we think bhakti is the best. Actually, bhakti incorporates the limbs of all other paths. It incorporates karma, it incorporates jnana, and it incorporates dhyana. So because it incorporates all three, therefore, it is the best of all yogas. It is the most complete of all yogas. What is Krishna using the word over here? Same yukta tamo mataha. Such a person is most yukta. So Krishna has used the word yukta so many times in the Bhagavad Gita. Yukta uchyate. But this is the only place in the entire Bhagavad Gita where Krishna uses the word yukta tamo. The most intimate. The most intimately united. So yukta tamo mata. That's why this is the highest realization in spiritual life. That one to constantly remember Krishna and constantly serve Krishna. Now, how does Bhakti Yoga include all of these? How does it include our action, our knowledge, our meditation? Because ultimately, all of these follow the heart. It's like if somebody loves cricket, except the person is walking on the street and suddenly he's walking, you'll see him swinging a ball or something. He's doing some actions. So what is happening is, the body follows the heart. The heart is in love with cricket, the hands will start moving automatically. The heart is the innermost essence of a person. And whatever we love, we will think about it, we will work with relation with it, we will use our intelligence in connection with that. That's why Bhakti Yoga goes right to the heart. And when it goes to the heart, then it incorporates everything else along with it. All of the everything else follows along. So in this way, Krishna has completed the sixth chapter where he has established that Arjuna should become a yogi. There is no loss in the path of yoga. And he has said that the best yogi is one who constantly thinks of me. And the next chapter Krishna will give an alternative path to think about it. And that alternative path will lead to the introduction of the bhakti section of the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll discuss that in our future classes. Madgatein antaratmanaha. Antaratmana means inside me. Madgati. So I should be his gati, I should be his goal, he should think of me constantly, within himself. So why within himself? Because yogis generally try to see the super soul within himself, within themselves. So yes, you have to see that actually super soul is me only. And it's not that you have to go beyond and merge into super soul, you have to constantly think of. Gattinanta chadhavan bhajate yomam, one who worships you. The impersonals have the idea, you do bhajan now, and then afterwards you just merge into the person. But this is no. Shraddhavan bhajate yoga. Who constantly does this bhajan with Shraddha. He's the best. Okay. Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Shrimad Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Gaura Prema.